Hi, this Shabbos we're going to have the honor and privilege of partaking of Parshios Matos and Masa. It's a Shabbos Chazak, and of course we hope that it will lead to a lot of chizuk. We begin with the principles of Nedarim, and we're told, Ish ki idor neder la'Hashem, when a person takes a neder, lo yachel devaro, he shouldn't violate his word. And Rashi says that this means that one shouldn't make his word schulin. Rashbam, on the other hand, says that this means one shouldn't delay fulfilling one's word. So the Sfas adds that the idea behind lo yachel devaro is that a person's speech is his essence. And Chazal tell us that one who takes a neder is like one who builds a bama. There are bamos that are permissible, there are bamos that are prohibited. And our job is to use our speech to elevate ourselves. Now, the Sefer Menachem Tzion uses a similar idea to connect Rashi and the Rashbam, that in essence, when we say that we're going to do something, we should follow through and do it. We shouldn't promise things and then neglect to fulfill them. We need to make sure that we raise our speech to things that are meaningful. Of course, after that period in time, Moshe Rabbeinu was told to go ahead and fight that final battle with the Midianites. And of course, Bnei Yisrael go out and they fight the battle and they keep the women alive. And Moshe Rabbeinu is dumbfounded. Hachayisim kol nekeva, you kept the women alive? And why was Moshe Rabbeinu upset about this if Hashem never told him to get rid of the women? So Rav Yaakov Moshe Harlab Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the one who wrote the Meimarom, cites the Shalom HaKadosh, who explains that when you see something that's so obviously going to challenge you to the point that it will destroy you, you don't need a divine command to take action, not to fail or falter. It should just come from your Seichel, and that's exactly what happens when you know that what a parent needs. Don't wait until he or she asks for it. Do it right away. And that's what dumbfounded Moshe. How could you not have realized the women of Midian, the women of Moab were here to strangle you, to overtake you? You have a responsibility to rise to the occasion. And we are told, V'yisav Nikim, Hashem u'mi Yisrael, that we have to be freed of our obligation from Hashem and from Am Yisrael. V'yisav Nikim, May Hashem u'mi Yisrael. So Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal explained that this means that a Jew is not the true owner of his own reputation. A Jew needs to realize that he doesn't have the right to forfeit his own standing. The character of a Jew is sacred, and he has to uphold it with dignity. That's our responsibility. And with that, we turn over to the beginning of Parshas Maaseh, where we're told, Eila Maaseh B'nei Yisrael. Why do we say Eila Maaseh B'nei Yisrael? These are the travels. Why not Eila Machanos B'nei Yisrael? These are the stops. So the Degel Machne Ephraim explains that it's not about where you are, but where you're going in life. The experiences that you have along the way in your life's mission. That's what's important to us. So my friend Rabbi Judah Dardak, formerly of the West Coast, currently of Eretz Yisrael, Akadosha, he explains that this can also be read into the words of the Pesukim themselves. We're told, Eila Maaseh B'nei Yisrael, B'yad Moshe V'Yaharon. Who came along on the journey? So Rabbi Dardak points out that that means friends, family, leaders. Each companion adds a different flavor into the experience and also creates part of the shared memory. But also to remember, Al Pi Hashem, this was always done through HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command. These were not ordinary travels, but spiritual journeys that allowed the Jews to grow each step of the way. And we write down, Eila Masehem Lemotzaihem. It's the understanding that the journeys symbolize a purpose and a mission. It's these types of trips that make a difference and highlight the differences that we are going to understand. And that is an important thing for us to think about and to keep in mind when we go through life. Eila Maaseh B'nei Yisrael, while we're on the subject of Maaseh B'nei Yisrael, my friend Rabbi Eli Zwickler asked the obvious question, why do we stress each of these steps along the way? What are we supposed to take away in that regard? So the Ma'or Ine Yeshanim explains that before the people entered Eretz Yisrael, they had to understand that capturing and inheriting Eretz Yisrael was based on the sacrifices they had made collectively as a nation in the process of growth during their time in the desert. When the Jewish people first left Mitzrayim, they were in dire need of development and growth as a nation. But by the time they were ready to enter Eretz Yisrael, that process had blossomed as they had learned from their many mistakes. They were ready to grow. We're told, that you should inherit the land and settle it. Why is there so much space in the Torah and in Sefer Yoshua dedicated to the boundaries and settling of Eretz Yisrael? Some more of Rabbi Rav Shachter Shalita used to remind us that Eretz Yisrael was endowed with the properties of kapara, of atonement. So says the Gemara in Ksubas on Daf Kuf Yad Aleph Amud Aleph. That's true for those who are buried there. Those who are buried there gain atonement, but those that live there gain an even greater degree of kapara. Eretz Yisrael clearly has an effect on the Jewish people, and the Jewish people have an effect on the land. And this is not only true in regard to the whole nation, it's true for each individual as well. That only when each and every individual Jew knew the exact location of his own personal plot of land, only then was the Kedusha completed. If one steals anyone else's property anywhere else in the world, that's a serious violation. If one steals his neighbor's field in Eretz Yisrael, if he just goes ahead and steals that, there's an additional violation involved. He's diminished the sanctity of the land, because the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is only in its complete state when each, every individual Jew has his plot of land that's rightfully his. Something for us to understand and contemplate. Finally, before the end of the parsha, we also read about the establishment of the Ari Miklat. And the one who goes to the Ir Miklat, to the city of refuge, because he murdered somebody accidentally, stays there ad mos ha-kohen ha-gadol, until the end of the Kohen Gadol's life. Now, that's not just to protect him, it's actually a punishment. And the question has to be asked, why is his fate tied to the death of the Kohen Gadol? So Rabbi Yaakov Nagin, a Rosh Kolel, a well-known Rosh Kolel in Eretz Yisrael, Shalita, suggested that there's only one thing that can atone for murder. Dam. Blood. For someone who kills intentionally, it's the murderer's own blood that can atone. But for someone who kills accidentally, we don't take his life. And so therefore it needs to be someone else's blood. In this case, the blood of the Kohen Gadol represents the entire community. And just like the Kohen Gadol can provide atonement for Klal Yisrael on Yom Kippur, he too can provide atonement for the Rotzeach B'Shogeg, for the one who kills unintentionally. However, this atonement can only take place if the individual is so connected to the Klal, such that the death of the Kohen Gadol is something that affects him. It's as if part of him has died as well. And that's something we need the guy who's in the Ir Miklat to understand. So-and-so, who has been here has atoned because he understood the Klal. You've been living apart from the Klal. It's an important thing for you to consider. It's an important thing for you to understand. Finally, in the Haftorah, and of course, this being Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, we will end the primary Haftorah, and then we'll add an extra Pasuk at the beginning and at the end from the Haftorah of Shabbos Rosh Chodesh to highlight the day. But we can't ignore the second of the Paranusa, the second chapter of Yirmiyahu. And we're told, Vayelchu acharei hevel vayabalu, that Bnei Yisrael followed that which is useless. It's nil, and they engaged in it. Now, why the double language, Vayelchu acharei hevel and vayabalu? So the great Rebaruch Mordechai Ezrachi Shlita explained that there's a double lesson here. The first is that when you follow nothingness, you become a nothing. And the second point is that it's not because we do nothing that we become nothing. Rather, in Shemayim, they hold us accountable for the fact that we were endowed with a piece of heaven, a piece of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we wasted it on nothing. When we waste potential on nothingness, we're liable for the wasted result, not only for the way and time we wasted. We have to grow. We have to build. We have opportunity. We're endowed with those tools. We have the chance to make it so. If we do that, chazak v'nischazek, we'll be able to grow and be strong. And may it be HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will that we figure out how to do that quickly in our days. Shabbat shalom v'chodesh tov to all.